Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tonight in Tulsa, you'll be able to hear one of the most special choirs in the world. Gloria Dei Cantores has received critical acclaim for their renditions of sacred music ranging from medieval Gregorian chant to 21st century new works. This ensemble, which makes its home at the Cape Cod Church of the Transfiguration, has released around 40 recordings. They sing in 16 languages and has toured 23 countries in Europe, Asia, and North America. They're currently in residence at Trinity Episcopal Church and will have a concert there tonight at 7:30, singing Bach, Herbert Howells, Josquin des Prez, and other late medieval and Renaissance-era French composers, which they've just released in their most recent recording, Sacred Songs of France, Volume 1, 1198 to 1609. My guest today is the group's director, Elizabeth Patterson, who's known for interpretive vision and commitment to performance authenticity. She's considered one of America's greatest choral conductors. She oversees the choir's repertoire of around 2,400 works. Has led the choir in world premieres of the Transfiguration Mass by Samuel Adler, the Vision by Dominic Argento, Folk Mass, and Let Us Move by Grammy Award-winning violinist Mark O'Connor. She's also recognized for extensive contribution to the world of Gregorian chant, working with the late Dr. Mary Berry of the Scuola Gregoriana in Cambridge, England, and directing the performance of chants in concerts and recordings. And she actually held a workshop earlier this week here in Tulsa. Elizabeth Patterson joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Elizabeth Patterson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Your world-class choir is in the midst of this tour of Texas and Oklahoma. And one of the things you're doing is not only performing music, but you're also doing a lot of workshops here in Tulsa, a Gregorian chant workshop, which is one of your choir's specialty. Can you take us back to the beginning? How did the choir get started?
Well, I'll try to give you the short version, Rich. It began with a group of people for whom singing was something somebody else did and not anything they particularly wished to do themselves. But when they understood that the singing was a, in a sense, whole heart and body experience in expressing their own faith, it began to take on quite a different cast for them, and they began to venture into the field of singing themselves. And as time has moved along, people have come and gone, but the whole level of the choir has raised, the whole commitment of the choir has raised, and so we find ourselves here today.
So I assume this sort of started with a new church? You sing at Church of the Transfiguration. Was that when the church was first getting underway that you put together this choir?
Yes, it was just, in a sense, a small gathering of Christians like you would have in any sort of mid-country situation. And they couldn't sing a doxology straight in unison together. It was absolutely horrible. So we've gone from the bottom of the dregs to somewhere toward something a bit more glorious, and it has been very much a question of confronting faith issues on a personal basis, because doing that really clears the way for singing with your whole heart to whatever's in front of you, so that the expertise or the musicianship has been added, but the faith has led.
So this wasn't a group of professional singers who gathered together?
Nope, it wasn't, although many in the choir have reached that professional level now, who never had any thought of doing so, but it's become from them a kind of, I would say, glorious trip.
You know, as I was listening to your recordings, that was one thing that I wondered about that, because you, sometimes when you hear professional choruses who are professional singers first and then they come together in a choral, there's a certain sheen to it. I don't want to say it's any better than or worse than mm-hmm. what you do, but there's this, you know, this, you hear this. And what I heard in your choir was just a beautiful, beautiful choir. And, you know, the voices on a single level when you hear them are wonderful, but they don't have that, you know, a professional singer has something there that you don't necessarily hear with your choir, but your choir is gorgeous. It is just like the perfect church choir.
It's a question of whether you put the faith first or the expertise, the vocal expertise first. And for us as a choir, we grew from the faith first, the expertise being added. That puts a very different context on it leading with faith first puts a higher commitment to the text and a more powerful exchange between audience and choir, so that it's not so much something to be observed as it is something to receive. It makes some subtle differences there.
Well, the choir, from that beginning, not being able to sing a doxology, the transformation has to be incredible. And, of course, you're doing all sorts of repertoire, from Gregorian chant to brand new works.
Right.
And this has been, I assume, probably the guiding ethos is something that gives glory to God.
Yes, it's singing to bless the heart of God.
Mm-hmm.
We hope. Yeah. We do our best. You know, we gather after and we critique ourselves, and we're not always 100% happy with what we do. But we're always in progress. It's always a question of growth. It's always a question of improving that total commitment, so that your heart and your body are solely involved in what you're doing.
You've written texts on Gregorian chant. Was Gregorian chant a part of the choir from the very beginning, or is this something that you picked up later?
It was fairly close to the beginning. The experience with Gregorian chant for me was a wonderful one, in that you begin to grasp some of the understanding, since Gregorian chant was really, you could call it the grandfather or grandmother of Western music. And so many of the composers already knew that chant was in the minds of the public and in their ears, and therefore there was a lot of understanding about phrasing, about well-known texts, and so forth. So much of what they did was based on what was already understood in society. And if we take a look at it now, we realize how much of that is lost, so that the concert goer today isn't really coming from the best advantage, the most knowledgeable advantage. That's been lost to us, as well as a lot of the brilliant music that's in the repertoire of the church is lost because we're not hearing it. And because we're not hearing it, we don't really desire to hear it. There has to be a lot of work to raise that thirst again, so that people, it comes from a wellspring of stuff that they've heard, that they know, that they respond to. And that takes a lot of work and a lot of time. But by looking at chant, you can see where phrase lines, where a lot of the faith was echoed in the text, where the composer himself wrote to their understanding of faith of that day, it just brings a whole tremendous richness to the music.
Well, of course, once you understand chant, all of a sudden things like Josquin, which is a good part of one of your most recent recordings, The Sacred Songs of France, you hear that lineage, you know, even though Josquin has changed the music quite a bit.
Right. But, it's built on that basis, and if you're going to perform it well, it's wise to have that kind of basis to understand that's what he composed from and what he launched out from.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a little music from that Sacred Songs of France CD. This is by Josquin des Prez. It's the Benedicta Calorum Regina. Again, you hear this roots, and what's really amazing about this piece is how light, I think of it as having a lightness to it, which a lot of times you hear this medieval music, and mm-hmm. there's a weight to it.
This is a happy piece.
Yes, it is. Well, let's hear a little bit of music. This is Gloria de Cantores. Our guest today is their director, Elizabeth Patterson. This is from their recording, Sacred Songs of France. That's music by Josquin des Prez, one of the pieces to be performed by Gloria de Cantores Tonight at 7:30, they'll be performing a concert of music by Bach, Josquin des Prez, Herbert Howells, and other early French composers, which are part of that new recording. One of the things I noticed, Elizabeth, about that recording, a lot of these are your additions,
yes.
The choir's additions. Now, I studied music, and I studied music from this period, and from somebody who's used to the designations of instruments and voices that you see in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century, and certainly today, making sense of a lot of these scores is an art unto itself.
That it is. You're quite right.
Has your choir learned how to read these in the sort of medieval scripts, or do you modernize the score? How exactly do you go about putting this before your choir?
Well, a few people, you know, can read the medieval notation, but we take it on ourselves to put it into a modern transcript. However, trying to keep in mind the sources it comes from, the chant line, the phrasing, etc., and we also try to go back and get as close to an original copy as we possibly can, which is a little bit easier today than it used to be because of all the so many of the sources being online, on web, where you can, you know, print down a source. We also have a lot of contact with different people in publishing houses in different countries, and they help us out. We have never found anybody reluctant to help us out, and we particularly found that in France, because so much, one of the reasons we decided to do some of the early French music is because it's just, outside of Dupre, there's just not a lot that's really done or well known, and it deserves to be in its own right. And so once we made contact with somebody in France, they were delighted to pull these scores for us because it says a little bit about how noble France's Christian church heritage was.
You know, I was looking at the list other than Josquin. The only two I recognize from music history all those years ago was Léontine and Pérotin.
Right.
Which, these were medieval composers, around the 11th century, somewhere around there?
Yes. You don't hear a lot of Léontine done, I must say, because it was so very, very close to the chant that it's, you know, it doesn't, the melodies don't wander far from a principal pitch, and they tend to evolve around in circles, but he gained a great deal with, particularly in the masculine sound of things, he gained a great deal in how he paired that up and what kind of rhythms he used with it. So it's, you know, it's a different look at things, but very close to the chant. And we're so melody-oriented in this age, on the one hand, and now becoming quite rhythmically oriented, that we thought it might be interesting to hear his use of rhythm in a sort of not too exhilarating melody.
You know, when I remember studying early music, I was struck by that sort of clunkiness, mm-hmm. if you will, to modern ears.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was going back and listening to this CD, I was going, wow, I've been missing the boat. This is really beautiful music.
It is. And you see, one of the things that has informed that, which we got in on strictly by great accident, was a discovery at Salem's through old manuscripts that were hidden during the war and then brought back to a monastery. There was a discovery of choir masters' marks, which begin to give a quite different look at pace and at rhythm and at lightness in an upward direction. And we got in on that, for which I will be eternally grateful, because it redeems chant from this plain song, slow-moving attitude, which in effect was sort of its popular downfall. And to bring that lightness, quickness, upward direction, sense of what the neumes themselves were saying and what they were driven by rhythmically brings the whole thing to a much different position to the ear, and songs that were plodding now take on a tremendous sense of joie de vivre, and, you know, for a lot of them, or tremendous meaning, tremendous expression of meaning on some of the more pensive.
Well, you know, this gets to the deep, dark secret of classical music, and
yes.
This music is that for the first 15, 16 centuries of this music, it was a matter of interpretation of what we really didn't know what the notation meant.
Right.
And it sounds to me like, in fact, at one point, we were making it clunkier than it really was.
I suspect so. You know, we went through that whole period where the church took the position that you don't sing something like you sing it in the bar, and therefore, or in the pub, and therefore the church had to take a more somber stance toward it. I certainly don't argue with that one way or the other. It's just the history we passed through. But in the end, the chant became quite clunky and terribly sober and not very invigorating. And that, in the long run, it just fell slowly more and more into disuse because it didn't give you any tremendous outburst of energy about what you were facing in your life.
My guest today is Elizabeth Patterson, the director of Gloria de Cantoris, a tremendous choral ensemble of 40 to 50 recordings altogether, specializing in sacred choral music from a Gregorian chant through the 21st century. They'll be performing a concert of music of Bach, Josquin, and Herbert Howells, among others, and Alberto Ginastera tonight at 7:30 at Trinity Episcopal Church. That is an interesting juxtaposition, putting Ginastera next to Josquin du Pré.
Yes. But you see, it shows us the richness of music through the centuries of Christian faith. To have the three in France, that was at a time when you didn't show passion in the same way. You showed it through the use of voices, the use of rhythms, duets, trios, quartets, moving it back and forth. And heavens to Betsy, you know, the most exhilarating rhythm was a triple rhythm in a duple measure. And you set that up against Ginastera, which is now the tradition is you show the agony, the raw passion now comes to the fore. And that's the reason we put the two side by side, in essence, or the grouping side by side, because it shows the richness of church music in Christian tradition, which we stand so in danger of losing.
Well, I'd like to talk about that in a moment, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about the second half. You'll be doing some Bach, but the big piece is the Herbert Howell Requiem.
Yes.
This is one of the great 20th century music of choral writing, especially sacred choral writing. And I guess the choir learned from, you had a specialist who basically had learned from Howells himself, right, at some point.
Well, George Guest did a lot of, knew Herbert Howells personally. George Guest he's deceased now, he was a choir master at St. John's. And he commissioned a number of pieces from Howells. So his acquaintance with Howells gave him the authority to speak about some of the things that Howell had in mind and had on his heart and did on a regular basis. One of the other programs we do is Take Him Earth for Cherishing, which Howells wrote because he was so struck by the loss of John Kennedy around the time of the assassination.
Yeah, that is a gorgeous piece.
And then the Michael, and of course having lost his son Michael, which just was devastating in his life, you see similarities. There is a Howells mark. You know, we pull a piece out, and I may pull it out without the composer, and then I'll say to the choir, okay, who do you think wrote this? They can nail Howells, because he's got certain sounds and certain strengths. If he's really emphasizing something, he'll build a huge crescendo, vacate beat one, and slam into it in beat two. So there are things like this that are just authentic Howells. Wonderful composer, and a lot of heart in what he did, even though he never really quite battled his own faith position out in his lifetime.
Well, let's hear a little music from his Requiem. This is the opening movement, the Salvator Mundi. This is performed by my guest today, Elizabeth Patterson, leading Gloria de Cantoris. They'll be performing tonight at Trinity Episcopal Church. Here they are performing music by Herbert Howells.
Thank you.
That's music by Gloria de Cantores. My guest today, Elizabeth Patterson, the group's director. They'll be performing tonight at Trinity Episcopal Church in a concert that will include the entire Requiem of Herbert Howells. That's just a short taste of that Requiem and one of their many recordings. When did you guys start recording?
Oh, my gosh. Ha, ha, ha. You caught me on that one. I can't remember. Probably back in the late 70s, early 80s, we began mm-hmm. recording.
Mm-hmm.
There was just, I'll tell you what, some of what drove us to it. There were just so many composers, and so much of their work was going unrecognized and unknown. I mean, there were certain composers, people know their name because they know one piece or can, you know, were struck by one piece and that stays with them. But what about all the rest? And it just seemed like it's so sad to think that so much of that stuff would be lost to us through carelessness or through ignorance or through a lack of exposure. So, and we felt if we did the work and we recorded it, then we would give church choirs that might not have the time my group was willing to spend on it they could piggyback on the sound they heard off the recording and maybe be inspired to sing some of this music that they might otherwise feel was too hard or they didn't have time.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that because at this particular point, in many ways, this is a great era of choral singing. There's a whole new generation of composers who are writing great music for the church.
Yes.
And yet, when you look across America, this eternal music is losing out in many congregations that used to hear it, at least some of it. And there, of course, there are many more congregations, Christian congregations, where this music has never been a part of the worship. I was wondering your reaction to that.
Well, I'll speak as a choir master. How's that?
Okay.
It's our fault. It's our fault. That's one of the things that has that sort of gave me the energy and enthusiasm to try to take a different position. It's our fault. And yet I can't say I blame church choir people. You know, when you're working in a church situation, it's a volunteer group. You sort of feel lucky if you can get them to settle for an hour a week. But it's with the group that I worked with, to go after the faith aspect first, to become invigorated about the faith aspect, about the chance, the possibility to enthusiastically enter into some praise situation or some situation where you're speaking your own emotions but through another composer's sounds in another author's text or biblical text, to open that up as the tremendous opportunity it is to exercise your faith and perhaps give yourself more strength for daily living, when that becomes the aim, somehow it spoke to people and they begin to put up with the strong way in which I worked with them. It's to their credit. They did the work, and they took a lot from me to do it because I was never happy, rarely, and never satisfied with what they did. And to have the commitment to stick with something like that and to develop a love with it under those circumstances, that proved to me it's possible. It is possible, but it feels so impossible, I think, in the hurly-burly of life and in most normal church situations. So I hope in some way, and I think it's become in the heart of the group too, that I hope in some way we're able to be a sort of back that people can stand on to maybe sing at a slightly different level from a different point of view than had been available before.
It sounds like that is an important point in your mind, that you can't approach this great music saying, let's sing this because this is great music. It has to, the worship part, the adoration part that is at the heart of all this music.
Absolutely.
Has to be first and foremost in your choir members' heart and in your heart. And then we want to have an adoration, or we want to have this feeling of worship, here is music that does reflect this.
Yes, and it's what that position, that human position, communicates human heart to human heart. I'm all about the, technique and the high level of expertise, but it can leave the listener feeling that something is extremely beautiful, but they can't do it. It's almost as if sometimes it appears behind glass. They can be stirred, but it feels impossible. It can only be done by the expert. And I say, rubbish. Rubbish. It can be done by anyone who can speak, first of all, and who has it in their heart to commit to this kind of an arduous task. And I think our group's existence proves that this is true.
And I assume when you're performing this music and singing this music in church, you're also providing some understanding to the congregants.
Yes.
Beyond what the choir is giving them through the music.
Yes, and the choir knows it doesn't sing anything until it is for them a word of faith, a word somewhere where they connect to it. It's a little bit like theater. You've got to find that place in your life where that piece and the text of what the composer was wrestling with comes to life for you, and you understand from your point of view what's being said and what it means to you.
Well, my guest today is Elizabeth Patterson. She'll be leading Gloriae de Cantoris tonight at 7:30 at Trinity Episcopal Church. We were talking about CDs earlier. It seems like you guys are putting out a CD, about every year or every 6 months?
Yeah, about that.
There's two new CDs recently, The Sacred Songs of Francis. Now, is that the newest one, or is Chants of Mary?
I think The Sacred Songs of France is a little bit newer than The Songs of Mary. But we're getting ready now to come back to the second volume of The Sacred Songs of France, which pulls that middle period, and there's also a new recording done by the men, and I'm not quite sure what that name is, that's coming out a little bit later.
All right. Well, we wish you great success. Hope a lot of people come out to Trinity tonight to hear some glorious music. Elizabeth Patterson, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me. Have a good day.
Elizabeth Patterson, the director of Gloriae de Cantoris, who will be presenting a concert of sacred music tonight at 7:30 at Trinity Episcopal Church. Call 918-582-4128 for more information. Well, Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. We're going to leave you with more music by this wonderful choir. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.